Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. I have the pleasure today of speaking with a couple of colleagues who I know well from the United Kingdom, Fiona Patterson and Sandra Nicholson, who are co-authors on a paper that will be published in the June 2016 issue of Medical Education entitled Widening Access and Selection Using Situational Judgment Tests, Evidence from the UK CAT. My frustration today is that while I'm going to be recording this call from a gorgeous morning in Montreal, I've unfortunately just landed here, and so I've tried to find the quietest corner of the airport that I can. I hope that we won't be interrupted too badly, but apologize in advance if this recording isn't quite as clean as it might have been otherwise. Fiona, can I ask you to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what brought you to this project?
Yeah, I am a professor of organisational psychology, and my main research interest is in selection and assessment, and in particular looking at how we best select for important non-academic attributes. And we've been doing a lot of work looking at situational judgment tests alongside our collaborator Philip Leavens in the University of Ghent in Belgium. And in particular, this piece of work was exploring the extent to which there are potential diversity-related benefits of using a situational judgment test alongside other measures in a selection system, and this one being especially geared towards medical and dental school admissions in the UK.
Thank you. And Sandra, same question to you, if I may. Your role or title and what brought you to this collaboration?
Hello, Kevin. Yes, my name is Sandra Nicholson, and I currently lead the research group of the UK CAT Consortium, who have very much wanted to introduce a test, as Fiona has indicated, that looks at non-cognitive personal attributes for undergraduate medicine and dentistry. My previous background has been as an admissions dean here at Barts and London Medical School before, and also my long-standing interest in widening participation. So I'm very interested to observe really what happens to SJT.
I wonder if you can tell our listeners a bit more about widening access. That's a phrase that I know to be used quite commonly in the UK, really as a noun in many circumstances, but many of our readers or listeners won't know what that effort has been or how it's been pushed in the UK.
Yes, thank you. So widening access means to me, and I think it's used most commonly when we're dealing with undergraduate medical and dental admissions within the UK, to increase the diversity of our student intake to reflect better the social class or the social demographic definitions, if you like, of the students themselves. So more students who come from lower socioeconomic class would be of benefit not only to the medical curricula, but also to the future medical and dental workforces in the UK. And we tend to think about social class rather than ethnicity or gender or any other markers of diversity in particular.
Fiona, I know that your background in selection is broader than the health professions. Are these widening access issues things that you're seeing impact upon a variety of domains, or is this primarily a health professions concern at the moment?
Very good question, Kevin, because I think it's an issue that all professions are dealing with. It's a particular pertinent issue in the UK at the moment, so whether it's law, banking, accounting and so on. There's a lot of work going into exploring issues to do with social mobility. And as we've looked at some of these issues, not just within medicine and dentistry, but also in other professions, we realise that this is an international issue and many countries around the globe are trying to address this particular issue, and in particular how to get, as I would frame it, you know, more working class kids into the professions. So I think it's very timely, and we were very keen to look at exploring what might be one of the practical solutions to that issue in the selection methods that people might be using, because we felt this research was very timely, and we certainly haven't solved all the problems, but we wanted to unpick the issues some more, particularly with a lens and looking at whether measures that look at non-academic attributes might be beneficial, as I said earlier, in promoting or diversity-related benefits.
What's your view, Fiona, on the cause of the lack of diversity or lack of representativeness? And I'm asking specifically because I'm wondering about your reasoning as to why the situational judgment tests might seem to be a reasonable intervention.
Well, again, very good question, Kevin. I think the nub of the issue is that, certainly within medical selection, there's been a large reliance historically on using academic indicators as the primary selection criterion. And we do know, again, anecdotally, people will say that the more you pay for your education, the more likely you are to get better results. And that's not true of everybody, but that is something that's of concern. And what we felt was that certainly for the theory beneath a situational judgment test, if what we're measuring is people's beliefs and judgments about what is effective behaviour in relation to things like teamwork and empathy and so on, that makes no impact necessarily of your parents' occupation and background. And so you could quite easily create an argument that actually if you've come from a more challenging background or less privileged background, actually you might have had more opportunity to develop your understanding and awareness of others' perspective and so on. So, you know, we could argue it from various vantage points, but we felt that if we focused on looking at the non-academic attributes, that might be a way in which we could try and level that playing field, because historically, as I said, there's been such a reliance on the academic indicators. So from that perspective, it seemed like a good starting point for further research.
I mean, that's a really important point in itself, because to introduce the SJTs into undergraduate selection, the sole purpose isn't to widen participation. It is actually to select students who are going to have the appropriate attributes to go on to be the best doctors and dentists. And if we can widen participation in parallel with that, better still.
I think the other point to it for me, and I'll be completely honest here, Kevin, there was certainly some serendipity in our early findings, and working with Sandra and colleagues at UKCAT, when we were designing the SJT, we collected a lot of other demographic information, and we've been looking at outcome connections in terms of predictive validity. In our early pilot days, we were really surprised to see that there wasn't the usual pattern that we might have expected with the other cognitive assessments, in that, you know, depending on your parental occupational status, there was no clear pattern. You know, so kids from less privileged backgrounds were doing equally well on the SJT. And so, you know, just those early findings, it got me thinking, wow, this is quite an interesting avenue for further research. It started to fit with some of the theoretical developments around the constructs we might measure in SJTs. And this paper kind of takes that agenda forward in looking at some large data sets and exploring that issue in some more depth.
Right, and this is an impressively large data set that I'll get to in one moment. Just before we do that, though, Sandra, can I ask you to elaborate a little bit more on what has been the norm for selection in the UK? I suspect many of our listeners will have heard the acronym UKCAT, but not have any real sense of what it is or how those data are collected.
Yes. So the UKCAT consortium came together in 2006, and initially we started off with four sub-tests, which really concentrated on assessing a candidate's aptitude for learning and verbal mathematical reasoning. So they do have a cognitive load, even though we're not reliant on a candidate's ability to have previously been in a privileged school with good preparation for high school examinations. And that was the aim. But very rapidly, we introduced subtests looking at non-cognitive tests or assessing attributes to be good doctors and dentists, because from the very beginning we wanted to be able to discriminate between candidates who would, on the basis of their personal attributes such as how they talk to patients, what they prioritise in life and their ability to care and to work alongside other people, which we know these things in practice when you are a doctor mean so much in terms of how your performance actually plays out. So you can be the bestest and the brightest of the bunch, but if you can't explain that information to a patient, then the patient really is no better off. So training is important, and we understand that in the UK. We understand that students have usually approximately 5 years to learn to be a doctor. We're not expecting them to come in fully polished, but to come in having the basics of these non-cognitive attributes would be something which we would desire.
Thank you, and I've already alluded to the notion that this study was focusing on whether or not situational judgment tests can help us better identify those basics. Fiona, again, coming back to you for more elaboration on that. What defines situational judgment testing, and how is it built into the UK CAT?
So, again, it's important to say that situational judgment tests are a measurement methodology, so there isn't one single type of SJT. We certainly published earlier work in medical education looking at postgraduate selection, but I think this was a significant departure because we were looking at medical and dental school admissions, and so there's a very clear requirement not to advantage people that might have had some experience in a clinical setting. And certainly our collaboration with Philip Leavens at the University of Ghent, Belgian studies also have been published showing that SJTs are quite helpful in looking at non-academic attributes in medical and dental school admissions within Belgium. So learning from that work, so for example, Philip will tell you the Belgian SJT ran into some problems with coaching effects. And working with Philip, we adopted a very different style of response format for the SJT. We drew upon some of our work we've been doing on job analysis at postgraduate level to define the domains of interest. So for example, empathy, teamwork and integrity. And then we set about designing a pilot tool, and this paper draws on some of that early pilot data to explore then the diversity issues. So the SJT has been a different styled approach in terms of the response format being presenting scenarios either based in the educational context about how you might be dealing with colleagues and students and tutors, but also some of the items relate to dialogues, for example, between a clinician and a patient. And we pitched the tool so that it didn't require any particular experience or clinical knowledge, but we totally focused on people's judgments about what was effective behaviour in these particular scenarios. So it's actually quite a short test. It's 30 minutes long. People get presented with about 16, 17 scenarios, and they're asked to make several judgments about different response options and how effective they think they are in dealing with some of the issues, focusing on those, if you like, interpersonal dilemmas.
Thank you. I appreciate in particular you saying that this is a methodology, and I would imagine that the focus of the individual situations and the questioning would have quite a big influence on what comes out of it. Sandra, was there any deliberate effort to focus the items that were included on the UK CAT on particular characteristics, or were they meant to be more gestalt observations of one's personal characteristics?
There was a particular intent. So when we started off in 2006, we thought those were the personal attributes that we would like to examine better. I mean, there's that whole battery of personal attributes that you need to be an effective doctor and dentist, but those three type areas were the ones that were most heavily voted for. And it's interesting that when Fiona's gone on and done the task-based work to look at, again, what attributes are deemed most important by qualified practitioners, the same conclusion is there. And I think that's borne out in wider publications as well, that empathy, being able to see the perspective of the patient, being able to work alongside other people, and having some idea of really what is preferable in a moral dilemma seems to be a good start. And whether these things, you can fine-tune them, but I think if you have a candidate who has very little understanding of those three domains, then I think we're looking at somebody who might well struggle.
If I can just add as well, Kevin, to what Sandra just said, I think there's a future research. I mean, this piece was centred primarily on medicine and dentistry, but an important research question in future for the readership would be to what extent these transfer across other healthcare professions. And our guess is that they will be fairly readily transferable.
Yeah, I would certainly guess the same. The characteristics that you're talking about are things that should be relevant and observable across a number of different domains, so I certainly hope that would be the case. But before we get into the specifics of where this might lead in the future, though, I'm going to suggest that we leave the methodological details for listeners to look up in the paper itself, but we'll just say simply that my understanding of what you've done is looked at over 30,000 applications to medical school in the UK and linked the SJT and other aspects of the UK CAT to various diversity issues. Sandra, can I ask you to share what you think to be the core findings and the things that you would most want to highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think Fiona has already commented on this by sort of, you know, stumbling across it, if you like, in the early days. But any test, any application assessment which indicates that you could choose a cohort of candidates which relied less heavily on their social demographic background is of interest. And I think this is a very promising initial finding with, as you say, large numbers of candidates, so it can be fairly robust. But something that is reliable, something that is evidence-based, can be used to assess students and select for undergraduate programs, which doesn't rely so much on prior demographic data. So I think the social class issue is of great interest. I think that the fact that ethnicity doesn't follow suit is an interesting finding which needs more exploration.
Fiona, anything to add in that regard? Were there particular things in this study that you found surprising that you didn't know from your prior work? Or have you any advice for our listeners in terms of how they might start to consider combining academic and non-academic strategies for selection?
Yeah, I mean, I think to echo Sandra's point, I think the research, having lifted the lid on some of the issues and looked more in depth at some large data sets, it's clear that the SJT has the potential to appropriately complement cognitive tests and selection of doctors and dentists to address, if you like, perhaps levelling the playing field in relation to socioeconomic status. I think I could also congratulate the journal, Kevin, if I may, in terms of the reviewer's comments early on in this paper were really helpful, because one of the key questions they asked us when we presented the initial paper was, well, so what? You know, what does this actually mean? What are the implications of that finding? And they encourage us to run what we show in this paper, some simulations or simulated scenarios showing, depending on who weights the SJT in the selection system, you can have differential effects in terms of the demography of the people you might appoint. And I think what's important to say is that, you know, that might be quite a significant departure with what people might currently consider. So, for example, we showed here that you probably have to quite heavily weight the SJT and the selection system in order to have a substantial effect in changing the demography of that profile if your important objective is to increase widening access. And, you know, that in itself has important implications. Certainly some of the work that we're looking at the moment then is in relation to not just the weighting of the different tools you might use, but also the sequencing. So, for example, one argument might be, well, should the SJT be pushed right up front in the selection system as a screening tool, perhaps certainly having academic indicators as a necessary but not sufficient condition at screening point, but then perhaps bringing the academic indicators for more fine-grained ranking at the latter end of the selection system. So I think there's all sorts of questions that we still have unanswered. I think we've got a potential practical solution to help level the playing field in relation to socioeconomic status. But I think then what we don't know is how would you best weight this particular style of tool and sequence it within a selection system to generate the effect that you might desire.
But if I could sort of add something into that with medical and dental schools' perspective, is that whilst we don't have the definitive answer, I do think work of this nature provides us with so much more information to help guide and steer. So at least by reading the paper, by looking, and also the UK CAT as an organisation, for example, can take the results of the paper and transmit those to our consortium members in ways which would encourage them to think about how to use this test and to use it most effectively for their own ends.
Thank you very much for that. As my final question that I'll pose to both of you. You've already mentioned some implications and that there are a number of questions clearly left to be unanswered. So let me ask you both to speculate a little bit. And if you were to put on your Swami robe and try to get at your crystal ball and imagine where we're headed in this domain, what do you think is the ideal scenario in your mind, given the work that you've reported in this paper and your broader explorations? Maybe I'll start with you, Sandra.
Okay, I'm always fairly brave, and so I think whilst we've seen quite a lot of innovation and change in medical selection in the last 5 to 10 years, I think this is probably one of the first papers, and hopefully it's the first of many, which will go on to demonstrate that we actually need to really review sequencing of how we select our students. No one debates, nobody argues that a minimal level of academic ability is absolutely essential in a doctor and dentist. But after that, what do you then need to do? And I think probably putting a situational judgment test really up front and weighting it appropriately, and we probably don't know yet how heavily to weight that, would provide us with a lot more information about the candidates we wish to select in. There is the other opportunity, and Philippe modelled this quite nicely, I think, whereas if you are selecting out with the SJT, what effect will that have? And will that help us with this other dilemma in medical selection, where actually there are very few students who struggle and fail, but those students take up huge amounts of time and support. And if we could identify them earlier, that would be very helpful.
Great. And Fiona, same question to you.
Yeah, just to build on what Sandra's saying, I think that's enormously important to looking at the sequencing of selection. And we encourage people to think more about selection system design, because previous research has tended to focus on individual methods more often. But of course, you know, practically getting good research data to look at that is problematic. So we might have to rely on simulations, unless somebody's got the perfect data set. They don't use an SJT, but they sit it alongside current selection procedures. I think the other thing for me, Kevin, with my research hat on, is that we're using SJTs to look at non-academic attributes, but there's certainly other selection methods out there, like an MMI, for example, that you're very familiar with. And we would like to replicate this kind of study or thinking with other selection tools that explore non-academic attributes. And if we are thinking about selection system design, it's not just about the weighting and sequencing, but it's also which methods are the ones to use. So how are SJTs and MMIs complementary? You know, how would you weight them? To what extent do MMIs deal with the widening access issue or not? I mean, there's some research emerging, but I think we'd also like to look at other methods in the broader selection system to go further in looking at the widening access issues.
Yeah, it is definitely an exciting time in this area within health professional education, and as you both represent, more broadly. So I will end there with some optimism for the future. Looking forward to hearing how that work continues to evolve, and wanted to make sure that I thank you both for not only taking on this important research, but for taking the time to speak with me today. And I will just remind our listeners before signing off that I've been speaking with Sandra Nicholson and Fiona Patterson about a paper that they have coming out in the June Medical Education Issue 2016, entitled Widening Access in Selection Using Situational Judgment Tests, Evidence from UK CAT. Thank you both once again.
You're welcome, Kevin.
Always a pleasure, Kevin.